Michigan's Upper Peninsula. I helped out with this junior high ministry. It was run by just a few folks in our church, and on the Wednesday or a week or so before Christmas, a really well-meaning congregant shared the five-minute faith talk, and he was kind of a downer. His point was that all the celebration that we observe to welcome and re-welcome the baby born in Bethlehem should not distract us from the fact that this baby was born to die on the cross for our sin. The manger leads to the cross, he said. As a hymn in our own hymnal puts it, Christmas has its cradle and Easter has its cross. And it's number 109 if you want to flip through that, you know what I'm speaking. And like I said, this was a well-meaning congregation with a real heart for the kids in the community. But his message, and the message of this hymn, and the message of this kind of theology, boils the purpose of Jesus' birth down to his death. And this message is kind of like a damp rag on the mystery of incarnation that we celebrate in this season. And never mind the fact that talking about a baby dying is just kind of ghoulish. And our story today, I believe, offers a different trajectory. The cradle does not inevitably lead to the cross. His life's purpose was not his death in order to appease God's wrath. Our story today and the central chapters of all four Gospels demand that Jesus was born for more than slaughter. His life, his words matter. Because based on Luke's placement of the story, the cradle leads to the temple. They take him to the temple and he meets Anna and Simeon, and they both sing their songs about him. The cradle leads to the temple, but I have to admit that that well-meaning congregant in Iron River, Michigan was partially right. We cannot keep Jesus silent and docile in the cradle. But neither can we keep him silent upon the cross. His life and his words matter. And in this story, as a foreshadowing of his adult ministry, as I shared with the kids, the adolescent Jesus breaks his silence and he finally speaks. And when he speaks, he asks questions and he posits answers to the religious leaders. He amazes them and he confounds his parents. And he does this in the very place and among the very folks who would later use a cross to silence him. God comes in human form at Christmas. Not to remain docile and silent in the cradle, but to speak. To speak in the temple and attempt to revolutionize the temple system. Early in my study of this passage this week, I realized, though I had heard it for years, though I incorporated it into that Hamilton parody video we did with the kids last year, I had no idea what this story meant. And in study, I came to find out that I was in good company among scholars and commentators. Because it seemed that the more they attempted to solidify the goings-on of this story, the more they tried to solidify and explain the pseudo-belligerent response of the adolescent Jesus, the more they attempted to sort out the complex family dynamics that are taking place, the more they tried to solidify Jesus' self-understanding of his human and divine nature, the more this story's meaning just vaporized. But still, in my study, it wasn't all moot. One point is worth mentioning. Ancient biography in the time that Luke wrote his gospel almost always included stories like this about the youth of the subject. They did this to highlight their characters, their subject's character and purpose. And oftentimes these stories were exaggerated or they were just plain made up, and you can think of St. George Washington and his apocryphal confession about chopping down the cherry tree as a good example. And in fact, there are these apocryphal stories of the young Jesus performing miracles, of making clay birds and then bringing them to life, of stretching lumber for his father in the wood shop, And I tell you this only to highlight that against this common practice of exaggeration, of these hidden youth stories, this story from Jesus' youth is actually really quite extreme. I wouldn't call it miraculous or especially mysterious. So it seems to me that the point is not so much the finer points of what Jesus said, or how he understood himself, but where he is when we hear him speak for the first time. Luke is telling us, even in his youth, Jesus is drawn to the heart of religious and political power. Jesus is drawn to the temple. So the cradle in Luke's literary yarn leads to the temple. And the conflict at the temple leads to the cross. And the cross, let us not forget, leads to resurrection. And the journey to the temple is a deep theme in Luke's gospel. In chapter 9, Luke dramatically begins Jesus' fateful, meandering journey back to Jerusalem. It says, when the day is drawing near for him to be taken up, he set his face to Jerusalem. It has this hinge moment of destiny, of something drawing him back toward this place. And when the adult Jesus arrives in Jerusalem for Passover, he is drawn to the temple once more. And when he arrives, he confounds the authorities with some prophetic theater. He uses a whip to rid the temple of the animals and the money changers and the profitable religious economy that serviced the political will of these leaders. Likely the same leaders he had amused 21 years prior. And after this, Luke tells us every day he was teaching in the temple. The chief priests and the scribes, the leaders of the people, kept looking for a way to kill him. But they did not find anything they could do, for all the people were spellbound by what they heard. And after this, Jesus holds court in the temple for 2 chapters. He tells parables against the leaders, and they try to grab him. They sneakily set a trap and try to question him questions about paying taxes, and his answer stuns them into infant-like silence. They ask moot questions about the nature of the resurrection, and his answers halt any additional questions. But meanwhile, the people, the powerless and the marginalized, listen with wide-eyed wonder. And the dramatic tension playing out in the temple rises to a murderous pitch among the leaders. A plot ensues. And the trap is set. Because the cross, you see, is not an abstract object or a divine plot device. The cross is not a timeless or ahistorical theological tool for God's wrath to be appeased. The cross is the tool used by the powers of the day to finally silence this person. To silence this person whose questions and answers in the temple only got more annoying the older he got. The cross is the pacifier by which the powers of the day seek to force this adult back into slaughtering clothes, to force him back into his newborn, blissful silence. Cross is a human response to the ministry and message of Jesus. It's our response to the calling toward the temple that Jesus sensed even from his youth. Perhaps the powers could have readjusted. Perhaps his questions and parables could have incited an honest appraisal of their priorities. But instead, his questions inflame their murderous rage. The cradle leads to the temple. Out of his great love for us, Jesus is drawn to the center of power. And there he speaks the truth. So how will we respond to his questions and his answers? Will we allow him to speak freely? Or will we swaddle him back into his docile newborn silence? I pray that we, like Mary, might be willing to treasure these things in our hearts, in our bodies, and in our minds. That in this coming year, the words of Christ and our complex affection for him might grow, so that we, like Jesus, can also grow in divine and human care. Amen.